Following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Good evening. This is Hassan in the studio with Charlie. Charlie Saladino. That Herman is nowhere to be found. And Tom is here, just to make sure I mention Tom. And on the phone tonight is Mark Torres, the so-called host of the show.
Hey, Mark.
Herman is still chasing that moon turkey?
Apparently so. Mm-hmm. And it's just a red-letter night. For all the members of the cast.
Just a banner day. But anyway, if anybody has any trouble hearing us, they can go to the website, which is www.am1240wgbb.com.
Right, and you can also pick us up on our archives if you've missed any parts of this show, or... as we missed the whole beginning of the show,
yes,
or last week's show or the previous week's, it came www.itcamefromtheradio.com, which the archives are stored there. And if you want to call in to the show tonight, the phone number is 631-888-8811, and that's all the service announcements that I need to make. So Mark, you can do whatever you got to do.
Take it away with the news now.
Yeah, I've done the station identification thing.
Take it away, Mark.
Nicely done.
I'll try.
Alrighty. First bit of news. After enduring a high-profile production delay, major casting change, and the highest bill in Broadway history, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark finally opened for preview performances this past weekend. During the first preview performance, audience members who paid about over $140 a pop were warned by the show's producers beforehand that the show might need to pause during the performance because it was still a work in progress. Turns out there were four stops in the first act alone, including one incident where a stunt gone wrong left Spider-Man hanging over the audience for several minutes while the stage hand tried to pull him in.
In the words of the Austin Powell movie, isn't this magical?
Yeah. That's a disaster.
Yeah.
Wait, so
oops.
Yeah.
Explain what it is, Mark. You have to give us some background on what the show actually is.
Oh, it's a Broadway performance of Spider-Man. So basically they're going to have high wire acts. It's supposed to be like a movie on the Broadway stage for Spider-Man. And there was problems from the word go. And now they said that two actors were hurt for the stunt work before it premiered. And now Spider-Man was doing a stunt. The actor who in the Broadway show was stuck on the rafters and in the ropes while the stagehand was trying to pull him back in.
I'd like to say one thing to all this. You mentioned before that when before the premiere started, who was it went out on the stage and said...
The producer, the show's producer.
The producer. Wouldn't it have been nice if he was at the box office before those people were buying the tickets to say, hey, this might happen before you spend your 140 whatever it was dollars?
Well, they say it's a common practice that, you know, people miss lines, they miss the cues because they're still working out before the official premiere, which is in January 11th. So this is just a preview run, and people wanted to pay that much to see it, and they saw it. It lasted 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Did they like it? Do we have any word on what the audience reaction was?
We have no audience reaction.
Audience reaction. I have some audience reaction. One person said this was from the papers, and one person, Newsday, actually. One person said that he was disappointed in the music, the U2 scores, but that was, again, one person. Other people said that They loved it. It was fabulous. And, you know, even with the delays, you know, they could see it being an unbelievable play. Huh. And then other people also comment about the music, saying that it was good. So you had mixed
reactions to the to the show. All right, well, that's not terrible. Nobody came out and barfed, so I guess that's a good thing.
I think they all came out amazed at what would have been going on, you know.
Considering how long it was, I bet they all came out and headed straight for the restroom.
Or the bar, either one. I don't know. It's Miller time. Hey, the actor's dangling over the audience.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. But seeing Spider-Man dangle freely for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes would be worth the price of admission for me. Just nice, really? Nice job, Spider-Man.
I'm sure there was a lot of applause while he was up there. You know? And then the biggest applause was the guy who got him down.
Yeah, they cheered for him more than anybody else on the show.
Yay. Had to whip up the hook and just pull him down.
Yeah. Or have somebody with a crack shot with a BB gun or something going for the cable. You guys in the audience, catch him.
Yeah, if you can get his cable, you get a free show.
Yeah.
As soon as we find someone to replace Spider-Man in the next 6 months.
As the audience participation portion of the program.
It's like Spider-Man out of the hospital.
What other piece of news?
All righty. So speaking of the weekend and the shows coming out and whatnot.
Mr. Segway.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows remained number one, making $50.3 million over the Thanksgiving Day weekend, bringing its total to $220.4 million.
In 2 weeks.
Well, a week and a half, yeah.
Now, was any of them quoted as saying, "We're disappointed in that"?
Well, because Harry wasn't dangling over the audience.
Yeah,
anytime,
no, because we thought it would make a lot more, but, you know.
Actually, all the studio execs are saying that this is just a preview for the big bag of money they're going to make with the second one. Which is
You're kidding me? That goes without saying.
A mountain of money it will make.
Yeah, the search is off.
Yeah.
They're not searching for more money. They found it.
They found it, and they're going with that.
They called off all the search parties. They found more money.
Yeah.
So they're expecting it to be a bag of money for the part two. Definitely.
Yeah, they're already they're setting up the money trucks right now on this giant chute. It's in her house.
Okay.
All right. You know,
the executives
have
already ordered the golden toilet seats.
Yeah.
Yes, and this is it. Well, they have to cash in because this is it. It's the big. It's over.
Yeah, definitely.
And Radcliffe and what's his name, Rupert Grint and Emily Watson need to go on with their lives, making movies, and forever being called Hermione and Harry and
Emma.
Weasley.
Yeah, Emma Watson deliberately cut her hair very short just to disassociate herself from the part anymore now that she's no longer
playing. Not going to work.
Well, she says on a psychological level it does, so got to take her word for it.
Oh, well, fair enough. But it didn't work for Shatner. It's not going to work for her. Shatner's still Kirk.
Shatner didn't have to cut his hair. He just took his wig.
Yeah, he took his toupee.
That's all. But anyway,
you mentioned how people were disappointed. Actually, the reverse happened. The people who made Tangle, they were surprised by how well they did. It came in at number two with $49.1 million. So it just barely got beat out by Harry Potter, which they were amazed that happened.
Well, it was a great little film. I happened to see it, and very empowering to a young woman. So they've got a real built-in audience there. You know, like I said, plus the fact it's just a darn good film.
Yeah.
There you go.
I haven't seen it yet.
Ironic part about Tangled.
There's an ironic part?
Yes. It happens to be Disney's 50th animated feature. And to celebrate this fact, Disney announces that they are done making movies about fairy tales and princesses.
What? They're done making movies about what?
Fairy tales and princesses.
Really? They're just going to go for the gritty realism, right, from now on?
They'll just be reissuing everything, saying new digitally mastered.
they say that the reason behind it is that the studio is fearful of alienating young boys and young girls who consider themselves too cool to want to be princesses anymore. That's why they added more action sequences, chase sequences, and they changed the title of the movie. It used to be called Rapunzel, and they changed it to Tangled to try and, you know, lure the boys in there.
It's still got a cover of a, you know, a girl with a big head of hair. You know, it's still got a poster of that. That's not really going to work. It's still a CGI movie. That's not going to get a lot of. That's going to get a lot of boys, maybe. Not going to get a lot of guys.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen. So,
well, I mean,
you got movies like Megamind and, you know, so, real geek fests like that. That's
Megamind, I think, slipped to number three.
Yeah, but they gotta make more movies like that if they want to attract the guy audience. The girl, I don't know why you would want to get away from the female audience. That's where your pot of gold is.
Some money out of.
Yeah, it's a gold mine.
They're getting, you know, Disney are my favorite people, but they're getting out of hand. Really, they're losing track of what's real. Now they're going to appeal to the young gang members now because they're going to stop making these movies because it's not cool. Well, how many years has it been cool? And, you know, you could always like this movie, could do different twists on it, but, you know, they just make me sick.
I think the idea that anybody goes to see a movie out of coolness is wrong in and of itself.
Yeah, of
I've never in my life went to see a movie just because I thought it would be a cool thing to see or I would be cool for going. I mean, I've gone to movies where I thought I would be entertained. I thought it would be a great film. I thought I would, you know, I was interested in the subject matter, but it had nothing to do with my status amongst my peers.
My friends would love me for watching this movie.
They're going to think I'm a god for watching this movie.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I have never went to a movie because of coolness.
Yeah, me neither. You go because you follow a particular director or more shallow, a particular actor or actress,
right.
or you like the original source material, or you're just curious as to what they're going to do with this particular theme or story, or simply because it gets great reviews.
It's got nothing to do with who you think you should, you know, who you think you are and what movie you think that you should watch as that person.
A slight exception. Sometimes people will go see a movie if all their friends say they they want to impress and they want to be able to talk intelligently about it with them.
That's true. I'll give you that, but it's rare. That's not the main.
Agree. It's not the main. It's one of the exceptions to the rule, and there's always exceptions to the rule.
So I think to do a study based on
their logic.
What was that?
I said according to Disney, that's their logic.
I know, but to do a study based on that all by itself is ridiculous.
I'll tell you exactly what this is because I was in the business. This is some corporate office at Disney trying to justify their checks. So they come up with this idea and it sells to the Disney people. So
keep in mind that Charlie's attitude about Disney is a little biased.
They have
it doesn't have to be Disney. It could be any corporation. They all work the same way.
They're all dark dark and evil, sinister creatures.
Yes. Also, they have been getting some flack lately from various women's organizations, feminist or otherwise, saying that by encouraging girls to go for the princess motif, they're encouraging an unrealistic expectation. Even if they're a liberated princess who saves the white knight instead of vice versa.
That's a completely different story.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I can understand that you know, they want to get away from that story because they think that particular storyline is not encouraging or you know, not appealing to the modern.
Also, they've done a good chunk of the major stories about princesses. If they really wanted to continue it, they'd have to start going to a lesser known material.
They could do urban animation and, you know, have Snoop Doggy do one of the voices or something like that. I'm not kidding about that. They want to catch the real public. Go out to the neighborhoods.
Yeah. I suspect they'll still have strong women characters since it's shown to be a seller, but they'll probably counterbalance them with strong male characters.
Yeah, who blow things up.
Yeah, basically.
Because that's basically the only thing we're interested in is explosions.
Yeah, swap the magic wands for blasters.
Exactly. And Harry Potter would be a big big deal for the guys.
Yeah.
Right? If they had guns. Yeah. Only they carry guns around. Yeah.
Believe it or not, I once read a piece
Harry
of fan
the
fiction
Bullet
where
Potter,
they did.
His maiden name.
Yeah, they crossed it over with Harry Dresden, if you know who that is.
Okay. All right.
That's... Believe it or not, it actually worked fairly well.
All right. So now for some sad news.
Oh, we all good. Know this.
Mm. Yeah. Actually, I have two bits of sad news. Irving Kirshner, film producer and director, died Saturday at his Los Angeles home after a 3.5-year battle with lung cancer. During his 4-decade career, he worked on such films as The Flint Clan Man, Eyes of Laura Mars, Never Say Never Again, RoboCop 2, and of course, he's most famous for directing Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
He was 87.
Oh, wow. That's too bad. I saw that that he died the same day as probably your second piece of news.
Yeah. And the other sad news, Leslie Nielsen died on Sunday from complications of pneumonia at a hospital near his home, surrounded by his wife and friends. Leslie Nielsen came to Hollywood in the mid-1950s, and his first starring role, The Vagabond, came with Catherine Grayson. He called the movie The Vagabond Turkey because it flopped. And he went on to star in such films as Forbidden Planet, The Sudden Adventure. But he, of course, he is best known for his comic roles, right. Airplane, Repossessed, and, of course, the Naked Gun TV, the Police Squad TV series, which led into the Naked Gun movie. He was 84.
Wow.
That is a big loss whenever somebody like that passes, and a gentleman who could make you laugh constantly, that is an amazing loss. I met him. He was a wonderful guy, and his first big part for a major motion picture was Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that Star Trek was based on Forbidden Planet, because if you watch it with that in mind, you notice that all the roles, except for maybe some of the secondary ones like Uhura or Sulu, are all represented there. And their spacecraft has essentially the same mission as the Enterprise, and you know, right on down the line.
And their weapons fired, you know, for that time, like amazingly, almost the same. You got a direct beam of light with Star Trek, but now you had little.
Yeah, well, that it was like a constant pulse,
right?
Like exactly. I always assumed it was supposed to be firing plasma photons.
Yeah,
high energy plasma would do everything that. That it was shown doing.
Yeah, he was an amazing guy.
You know, nobody ever talks about. He was a great villain in Creepshow.
I didn't see that. But I'll take your word for it.
He was a fantastic villain in Creepshow. He was himself and Ted Danson. I think when Ted Danson was young and had dark hair.
Yeah, buries him or something.
Yes, I think it was pre Cheers. It was a long time ago, but he was actually a really smarmy, sinister character, murderer, and it was a contrast because it was just around then that the it was kind of just after Airplane, so everybody had rediscovered Leslie Nielsen as a comedian, so this movie was a big contrast for him.
Yeah, well, that points out something about how talented he really was. I mean, it's sort of a rule of thumb that great comic actors usually make poor dramatic ones and vice versa, but he managed to cover the entire spectrum and do it creditably.
Well, I think one of the big reasons that he was able to do that was he was a big practical joker. Even on the series films, he would walk in and...
So just, he was always carrying the humor around with him.
So he always had... Right, exactly. He always had built-in sense of humor there.
I think I'm willing to forgive Irving Kirshner for RoboCop 2 just because of Empire Strikes Back. I'm going to let that go. And I'm going
to... I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, before we hit the break, I just want to have a quick thing about Leslie Nielsen. On the villain side, he was the villain in Surf Ninjas. General
well,
Gang.
Yeah, all right.
And his comic and dramatic roles was best seen in a little show called Due South.
Yes.
He played a serious, in like the first episode, he was dead on serious. And then he also went to Goofy in the same episode. And I was amazed by the transition that he did from one to the other. So it was amazing, and I guess Goofy's really nice.
Yeah, he played the main character's late father's partner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mother was addicted to that show.
Yeah. Good show.
She liked Mounties.
Yeah, we're ready for a break.
Yep, we're ready.
I will be right back with you on the radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Our show.
And we're back.
Excellent, Tom. Kudos on that montage.
Yeah, well, actually, that was all entirely, and actually, it was Mark who picked it out this time. That was the theme to The Naked Gun.
Right.
Right.
And apparently, it just switches in the middle like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the celebratory trumpeting police anthem in the very beginning, yeah, and then it goes into the jazz, the swingy.
The beginning of the movie.
Yes.
The initial movie.
Yeah. Especially wasn't the first one after he beat up all the the guys from Idi Amin and Muammar Gaddafi and Gorbachev and a bunch of other guys, and then they played that music while he was beating them all up, and then they played the police squad music when they did the intro and ran the credits.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Good stuff. So what's on the agenda this evening, Mark?
Topic of the week. Actually, it was something that we were talking about Skyline the other day.
As long as we don't talk about Skyline.
We're not going to talk about the movie. But it was just something that came up that we were talking about star power. Like some movies, they actually go out, well, some studios go out and make sure they get a name actor to be in sci-fi movies to draw people in. But other movies, such as this one, they got like, you know, no-name people. Sorry, Donald Faison. But they go out there because they want the story to be the star. I mean, look at the Harry Potter. They want the all-unknown. When they originally did Star Wars, they want all-unknown except for Alec Guinness. So I don't know what you guys think about star power in movies.
I don't have any thoughts about that.
So you just mentioned that it could work. This is such a statement here, but it's like I feel like I'm a medium now because I'm going to make a general statement. In some cases it works, in some cases it doesn't. Depends on the studio and the talent of the writers and the directors. I believe that anybody who has a great script and has the talent to make that movie, you really don't need star power, as in Star Wars and, you know. So that's what I believe in.
Yeah, a great star can't save a crummy script.
Yeah.
As the old saying goes from the theater, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Yeah, that's true.
But of course, you got to think that, you know, you don't know how all the movies will come out until it actually comes out. Well, 9 times out of 10, you don't know. So, you know, isn't it in the best studio's best interest to try and get, like, a main actor to bring people into the seat? Because that's what it is, to bring people into the seat.
I think some of the examples that you pointed out, I think it's a situation where most of those guys couldn't afford name actors. I know George Lucas really couldn't afford. I mean, I know that's the attitude that I want unknowns. I don't want anybody to know who they are. But he was still choosing, if he was going to choose recognized actors, he was still going to choose from relatively
small pool.
Yeah, tier three, you know, from the acting pool. And some of the others that you mentioned, well, Harry Potter is a different story. That was intentional because there was definitely money behind that.
But also, they wanted the kids to grow into the parts.
Right.
And hopefully have the same group throughout the entire thing. And they got lucky they did.
Yeah.
I mean, for a while, there was a serious talk that Emma Watson was going to pull out of her role as Hermione, but she changed her mind at the last moment.
That kind of probably would have been seen many years later as a career mistake anyway.
Mm, well, she didn't do it.
No, so it was a good career move. No,
yeah.
But I mean, I think in a lot of cases that if it really to me has never really mattered. I mean, there's been movies where I've seen actors like Brad Pitt, I guess we're talking about, or Tom Cruise, or some, you know, so and definitely their names can add weight to whatever story. But it's been very rare that I've seen those movies and thought that that only this particular actor could play this particular part. So
the only one I can think of is just off my head would be X-Men. I remember whenever talked about an X-Men movie, the only person they said could be Charles Xavier was Patrick Stewart.
That's true.
And so right there, I mean, just for casting him, was that a stunt casting, or was it just, I mean, was that the person in body, or was it because he's Patrick Stewart that they decided to bring him in?
I think a little of all. I mean, Patrick Stewart was known for Star Trek, but he wasn't a super. He couldn't have been able to carry that movie on his own. I mean, not a lot of people flocked to that movie just because Patrick Stewart was Charles Xavier. I mean, he might have been a deciding factor, but he wasn't. He might have been a factor, but he wasn't the deciding factor for why people went to see that movie.
Yeah, the main reason I think was simply because it was X-Men, and all the fans of X-Men seeing whether or not they messed it up or not.
It was a brand name.
It didn't matter, right? Exactly. It didn't matter who was in it. It was X-Men.
Yeah.
So let's throw a perfect example: Batman. You know, all the different Batmans when Keaton left, they went for the star name. And that didn't help at all.
Yeah.
Well, like I said before, if it's not on
yes, you're correct, Mark.
You gotta actually have a script, though. That's the trick. I mean, Batman. What was it? Batman Forever was with Val Kilmer. I mean, that was horrible. And I'm not even gonna mention the one that came after it. And I know it. I know it by name. I know who was in it. I know everything about it. I just don't want to talk about it. I think it's abominable. So, it became a circus show. It became, you know, they also put it in the hands of another director who didn't respect the material. There's a lot of factors in it. So no, definitely
a lot of things can go wrong.
Yeah, I mean George Clooney's. He was really a big star. Now he's still a big star. He's yeah. one of those guys that have staying power. Mm. But he was much younger and he was really hip, you know. And yeah. he's just coming off of ER, and everyone loved him. And that didn't do a thing for the film, yeah. for the last film.
And although I believe he was good in it. I'm sorry, Tom. Go yeah. ahead.
I was just going to say is occasionally you will come across a film where after you walk out, you say, why isn't this doing better than it is? And when the example I'd like to toss out is a few more years ago than I like to think about, the movie version of the newspaper strip character, The Phantom. I went and I saw it, and I left thinking, hey, that's a pretty darn good movie. But it never really went anywhere, and I'm convinced that the reason why was, other than a very small role for Patrick McGoohan of The Prisoner, which is, let's face it, more cult stardom than anything else, right. there was not one single recognizable name in it. And I didn't. And I honestly think if it just had,
wait, it had
one good name to give it a little bit of a kickoff, it might have been a really... What? Great franchise, because it was a wonderful film. I
wasn't
really
that Alec
was.
Baldwin?
I don't think so.
No, you see the shadow. You're talking about the shadow. I'm thinking about the shadow. You said the Phantom. That was Billy
Phantom.
Zane. Billy Zane, and they had Catherine Zeta-Jones before she was anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Tracy Swanson was nobody either.
Yeah, but you know the big thing there is that they had Catherine Zeta-Jones before anyone knew who
right.
Catherine Zeta-Jones
and
was.
And they had Billy Zane. That wasn't. Yeah, actually, The Phantom is a good movie. Though it was surprising. That was one of those movies where I had to be told about it a couple of times.
Yeah,
you know?
It just didn't. I don't know whether it was because the publicity of a campaign failed, but I tend to think it's because they just needed a little touch of star power, more than they got with the late great Patrick McGoohan.
Yeah,
who incidentally I intensely respect for his work on The Prisoner. So please don't think I'm bad mouthing him.
Might have been the big purple leotard that.
But he made it.
He did make it work. He did. I'm not gonna. All right, but a lot of people don't know The Phantom. You know, The Ghost Who Walks. A lot of. I mean, it's not mainstream. It's not like Superman.
What about Superman? I mean, you know, the cast for the news.
The infamous.
When they get all this legal stuff out, they're gonna have a new Superman. And they're gonna go. Are they gonna go with a big name? Or are they gonna go with the unknown? They got money behind that.
As long as the last name's Reed. You know, isn't it coincidence that all
George Reeves yeah, and Christopher Reeve. Well, you know, the problem is the character is bigger than any star who would play it. And I don't care who they got to play. I don't care if they got Robert De Niro to play Superman. Superman's bigger than Robert De Niro. Yeah. So if it's going to overshadow any. I think the star power, the star celebrity, and the character celebrity would cancel each other out, and it would be very ineffective if it was someone we knew. Because they were talking about Nicolas Cage at one time before they redid the Superman Superman Returns, and that would have been horrendous.
Bad.
I can't even imagine why you would even think that way, other than the fact that he was a bigger star back then, also, than he is now.
He went on to do Ghost Rider.
Yeah, and that didn't really help him too much.
Hassan is right, because you always hear people say, he made a good Superman, he made a bad Superman. It's like, well, Batman, he made a good Batman, the role is bigger than them. I don't care what star you get.
That's why I don't like Christian Bale as Batman. I think Christian Bale they make Christian Bale to be bigger than Batman, and Batman is bigger than Christian Bale, and that's the downside of the whole that celebrity casting thing. Sometimes you just got the wrong person, but you know, I mean, I'm just one guy, and that movie made it ungodly amount of money. Yeah, so the heck with what my opinion is.
But by the same logic, Christian Bale couldn't do anything for the Terminator 4th one.
Well, yeah, that was the director. McGee needs to really stick with television and comedies and little crappy
American
Psycho. Yeah, because
he had the star power. I mean, you know,
he did, but he didn't have the star script. Again, he didn't. The script didn't do anything. He had a bunch of people in that movie. He had Sam Worthington before before Avatar, but just on the crest of his of getting well known. He had Moon Bloodgood. He had a Bryce Dallas Howard. He had Michael Ironside. He had Kristen Bale. He had
Arnold Schwarzenegger, sort of had
Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he couldn't pull it. He had a Helena Bonham Carter. He couldn't pull it off. The script was just so terrible. Mm-hmm. It was just so horrible that it just didn't work. And he had a brand name. He had a Terminator movie. Terminator is a successful series.
Bad script can kill any production, no matter what else it's got going for it.
And they deserve it. The production does deserve it for not respecting the script.
A great example I think of was the second Highlander movie. The script was god awful. But they had some of the greatest special effects, some of the greatest costumes, some of the greatest editing, directing, so forth I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But it could not rise above that hideous, horrific excuse of a script.
Well, that's the same exact way I feel about Skyline. I know. That script, that screenplay, oh my God. It was just... And even me, who doesn't even pay attention to screenplays or scripts, was saying, this is so bad, I notice it. You know? So
this must be terrible, because I'm upset about how bad this is.
This script was written by committee after the office Christmas party.
Yes. And by their children, because they couldn't get up to...
That's what I'll say. That was always my acid test for Transformers 2. Was my roommate at the time. She looked over at me. She knows nothing about Transformers and doesn't care about science fiction, doesn't care about any of that stuff. And even she at one point looked at me and said, what is this? What's going on? I mean, she just knew it was bad. She didn't know anything other than what I'm watching is garbage. And it's
Stinkeroony.
Yeah. Transforming with robots that become cars and explosions out the wazoo, it still didn't do any good for that.
Nope.
It just really was terrible. And it's universally panned as a horrible movie, which I'm very happy, even though it made a lot of money.
It made up $1 billion.
Yeah, of course. And the people are stupid. People are just dumb, that's all. It's just true. It's people are stupid. People are dumb.
Anyway, I see a sign. Blood pressure rising right before me. Yeah, but here he goes again. I know.
Come on. Dark Knight? Terrible film. Terrible film.
Which leads me to my favorite director. One of my favorite directors. Favorite director. Robert Rodriguez. When he started out.
Robert Rodriguez makes bad films, though.
Yeah, but people go to see him. I love them. Danny, I mean, the worst one was Machete. I mean, when you talk about a script... that everybody goes to bed with this guy. I mean, come on. You're talking about science fiction right here. You know, Jessica Alba
says, I can't get over that movie.
What a gentleman. But who cares?
That movie was fantastic.
It was amazing.
We saw that movie. It was a midnight showing of that movie, and they screwed up the reel. And we had to wait about an hour to see the other half of the movie, and it was worth it. Because we it picked right up where it left off, and we sat down. We were riveted all the way to the end.
Now you talk about a car wreck, a train wreck. Even that movie was, but you stay there and you watch. It was
it was 100 times better. His Once Upon a Time in Mexico was not good. I couldn't sit through that.
It
started to fall apart.
Because you know what? He got too much into the story, which if there was ever a story.
What kind of statement is that? He got too much into the story.
Because it just should have been all Robert Rodriguez. You know what it is. You know what he is. I mean, he just all blood and
it's
guts.
It's all tongue
over
in cheek.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, there is such a thing as guilty pleasures. I mean, you can be watching something and say, why am I watching this piece of crap? But you just can't tear yourself away from it.
Mine is Roadhouse. Every time Roadhouse comes on cable, I have to watch it all the way to the end. I can't even explain it. I can't explain it. I have to see, especially when I catch it from the beginning.
That.
So do I. I have it. I have it at home. I have it on DVD.
Yeah.
And I still, when it comes on cable, that and Walking Tall with The Rock, yeah. for some reason, every time that comes on, I just watch it all the way. It's mesmerizing.
It's amazing. One of my favorite movies who did have big stars in it and was a Robert Rodriguez film was Dust Till Dawn.
Yes.
Because when I first saw that, I said, oh, this is interesting. It's like a hostage thing, Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, everything, all hell breaks loose. And yeah. I'm saying, literally. I like this movie.
It took a long time for that movie to grow on me. I was the only one amongst my friends who opposed that movie when that came out.
I thought that was just the whole thing in the beginning. And then you're taken with that and say, wow, this is a psychotic episode until, you know, and it's like, wow.
What about...
And thus, Selma Hayek is born.
Yeah, well. Let's not... Let's not I'm gonna mess up the mic.
What about a movie that came out this year, Book of Eli, that had huge star power, and it didn't make any money. I mean, it didn't make the money it's supposed to in the box office. That was a great movie.
Oh well, I didn't know. I don't know how well it did. I didn't know it didn't do well at the box office. But the subject matter is we just had The Road.
Yeah, wasn't that, I didn't see it, but wasn't that the one where basically all life on Earth had died out?
And, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone heard of what it was about, and probably most people just simply decided, I don't want to go see such a downer of a film, no matter how good the critics say it is.
I mean, it has the most depressing opening you've ever seen in a movie of all the Book of Eli.
Oh, okay.
That was the most depressing thing you've ever seen in any movie, the opening scene to that film. So
yeah, there is such an animal as the wrong film for the wrong time.
Right.
I mean, and you don't have a depressing film like that in the middle of an economic recession when people are feeling down anyway and want some escape.
That's what they said was wrong with Blade Runner. Blade Runner came out and tried to compete with it. You know, audience had gotten Star Wars, and then they got E.T. You know, they got these kind of feel-good science fiction movies.
Right, and then you got a dystopia.
Yeah,
which is a damn
But it had Harrison Ford in it.
Doesn't matter. That didn't do any good, as a matter of fact, because they were waiting for another Indiana Jones type film of him, you know, swashbuckling his way through the entire film, and it just really had nothing to do with that.
No, in most of the film, he was a punching bag.
Yeah, and he detected one thing. I think there's only one scene in that film where he actually uses detective skills to find, I think, the Joanna Cassidy character. Was the only character he found through his detective skills. Everything else he kind of stumbled on and got his butt kicked.
And they never did explain why they called him a Blade Runner. Truthfully, Blade Runner is the name of a totally different story by the same author about organ leggers.
Yeah, they mentioned that in the... I didn't know that personally, but they mentioned that in the documentary. But that was back in the day when you didn't have copyright laws, and you could just take a title from one thing and then take the story from another and just slap it together and make a script.
As a matter of fact, I think even to this day, you cannot copyright a title, only the work that's underneath it.
Oy.
Because it's I've encountered treasure islands that have nothing whatsoever to do with the classic Long John Silver and all that. And there's tons of songs with the same title.
I'm going to make a movie called The Dark Knight then.
Probably, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do. It's going to be Hassan Godwin's Dark Knight.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is you, if you were sued on it, you would doubtlessly win, but the studio would keep it tied up for...
I know.
Probably until Gabriel toots the tuba. So.
But I'd hang out long enough and I'd win eventually, somehow. Or
speaking of pirates, what about the Pirates of the Caribbean? You know, the whole Johnny Depp thing. I mean, you know, it was based on a ride, and then they just whip out Johnny Depp, and now he's like the hugest thing.
Yeah, but that movie made him. That movie made him. He didn't make that movie. I mean, people went to see him after the fact, but I remember the initial reactions were, what is Johnny Depp doing in a pirate movie? It's like, you know, his career's over. He's making pirate movies now. That's how it started.
Yeah.
And then the second one, if you know, the second one didn't work half as well without Jeffrey Rush. That's a genuine general consensus, excuse me, that it was seriously missing his character, because the third one really was, everyone says, far superior to the second one. So,
Matter of opinion. Yeah. I thought they tried to stuff too much into the third.
I thought they tried to stuff too much into the whole series, and I'm a fan of the series. I like the series completely, but there are some points where you're like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it was everybody was fascinated by the way Johnny Depp handled his character. He totally went away from the usual yo ho and a bottle of rum type. What he did was he turned his character into a fop. Which is a historical type from the time.
Right.
It's sort of like one of these, I got the chip on my shoulder, will you knock it off? You know, and the guy's deliberately acting foppishly.
An insane fop.
And
I think sort of a schizophrenic fop.
And
the most brilliant thing they did was made Keith Richards his father.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Keith Richards got that part because Johnny Depp ripped him off. And he ends up getting a movie role for it. That's fantastic.
Well, he knew his son. He would hang out with his son, and just they all started hanging out together. And I think you're right. I think he was just watching him at bars,
I'm going to do Keith Richards for this role. Which is, that shows you Johnny Depp's a heck of an actor, because if you watch Public Enemies and a couple of the other things that he's done before that, the Astronaut's Wife. And what was that?
Jump Street.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about movies. We're on the subject of movies. He didn't do anything in Jump Street. He was a kid. He was the good looking one in Jump Street. I'm talking about his acting. Like I said, The Astronaut's Wife and a couple of other movies.
I thought he was good. And here's where Hassan's going to attack. I thought he was good in Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
He was good in that movie. The film's not good. Yeah. The story's not good. He was great in that film. Yeah. And then, of course, that elevated the film, to a high level because of the fame of Pirates of the Caribbean. Because when they made that film, it was a little more than an independent film. He financed it all by himself. And then as it was coming out, the Pirates of the Caribbean hit. So now all of a sudden they had a superstar in the film. The film just, got about a couple million dollars more in publicity, and it just...
And I so enjoyed him in that film, because he's
good in the film.
He was a psycho, and I loved it.
But took his eyes out, though. That's just weird. That film is just too strange for me.
They had it. That was the Robert Rodriguez type.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so, Mark?
Yes?
We need final thoughts. We got 3 minutes here, man.
Final thoughts. All right.
What are your final thoughts?
Wow. Geez, I never had a final thought.
Yeah, it stinks to be put on the spot like that, doesn't it? You do it to me every week.
I guess the object of the star is to bring people into the seats, full seats in the first week, and if it need be, that's the only thing they can pull out of their butts to get it done. That's what they're gonna have to do. So hopefully the characters that they have sometimes don't need that ability, and they'll fill the seats anyway. How about that?
Okay. I like that. Charlie?
Your final thought.
I went to Charlie.
It's my final thought.
I defer to Charlie.
Yeah. I just think what I said in the beginning, you got a great script, you got a great director, you got great, people behind the cameras. It doesn't matter who you get in front of them, and the movie will sell. You got a million independent filmmakers who make great movies with no names.
All right. Tom?
I think that I stand by what I said before. If it's not on the page, it's not on the stage. A name actor can help, and if it's and sometimes can nudge a production over the edge if it's a basically good film to begin with. But like I said, if it's a bad script,
it's a lemon. It's a lemon.
If it's a lemon, you're gonna get lemonade no matter what you do.
And I think corporations and demographics and stuff should stay far away from entertainment in general. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there should be any surveys or anything like that. Mark.
Yes, we're ready to go.
Take us out.
So that about does this week on the Came From The Radio. If you miss any part of the show, like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com and listen to our archives. This one should be up within a week. And I guess if you want to send us an email, you can always send it to mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And we will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.